And good morning. Spent some time in reflection the last couple of weeks. One of the interesting features of the modern world we live in, and whether it's Facebook or Google Photos or whatever it is, they have these features, you know, that say a year ago this happened, and they show you the photo or whatever. And I happened to be looking at one of those year ago this happened kind of deals, and sure enough, it had a slide from sermons I was preaching a year ago. And so it got me thinking about a year ago. We were, you know, 10 months into the pandemic era and thought we were figuring things out. Oh, we were so smart. We really thought we were getting somewhere. And I was looking through the sermons I was preaching back then and started doing some reflection. And I preached a couple of sermons that were just kind of shared reflections with the church about what I was thinking about the state of the church and the state of the world at that moment in time. And I thought it'd probably be good to do that again now that it's been a year, and to think a little bit about where we are and where we're headed. And I even took some time to sit down with the staff and asked, you know, if you were giving the State of the Union speech to the church and saying, here's how we're doing and here's how we've done, what kind of things we would want to pass along, and did some reflection on that. And end up with the following points that I'm going to share this week, looking back at what we've learned, and next week, what I hope we can do looking ahead in the year to come. And just take some time to take stock of where we are, because as we live from episode to episode, from moment to moment in life and season and circumstance, we kind of tend to be reactionary, right? Where something happens and we adjust, and something happens and we adjust. And before you know it, you've adjusted 15 times and you can't remember why we started in the first place. And it's hard to just kind of take stock. So I thought we would try that this week and next. And the first sermon that I looked back at that I preached about this time last year was this sermon cleverly titled, No More Normal. And when I saw this, this was actually the picture that came up in my memory feed of things I had done last year, that it made me laugh, not because it was wrong, but because I had no idea how true it actually was, right? That there we were, just 8 months into what we thought had been the strangest year in human history. 2020 was just as weird as it got. And I thought that I was reflecting on that, saying, no more normal. Nothing will ever be the same again. And what's fascinating about that is that I really do think I believed it then, but it didn't take me very long to forget that that was the case. We even read from a passage in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 10, say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. And what the author there was trying to convey is that there is a danger of always looking back. I have no problem with history. I enjoy the study of history a great deal. I like to reflect on the past. It's literally what I'm doing this morning, is reflecting on the past. Okay, so he's not saying universally never think about the past. But he is making a point that there is a legitimate danger in how we look at the past. There is a tendency for us to look back and say, things were better. A year ago, things were better. And the irony is that a year ago, we also thought a year ago, things were better. And you know what we thought a year before that? A year ago, things were better. We always think the good old days are somewhere in the past. Everybody has some moment in their life they look back to, where whether it was, you know, as far back as high school or college or your first job or being newlyweds or having your kids at home or when your kids left home, whatever it was, like there's some moment in your life that you look back at and say, those were the best days. That was as good as it got, and I want everything to be like that forever. It's always in the past. I have never, ever heard anybody refer to their current life as, these are the good old days. This is as good as it gets. Currently, everything is exactly the way I want it. While we were going through the good old days, do you know what we were doing? Complaining about them. We were saying how lousy they were and how eventually things would get better and they used to be better. And that's kind of the point Solomon seems to be making. Say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. This is not a wise question to be constantly held up by this kind of misplaced nostalgia. Nostalgia is not a bad thing, but this misplaced nostalgia that thinks everything good was in the past, and if we could just get back to it. Well, that's what I was teaching about a year ago, and I really do think I believed it for a while, and then I myself got caught up in the possibility of getting back to the good old days. Because after the first of the year, they told us, you know, these vaccines were coming out, COVID's going away, numbers are going down, things are going to get better, and I got excited. Because, you know, I had been here a year as your minister and had got to be a normal preacher for like 2 months. And so I was thinking, here it comes. We're going to get to do church the way, you know, we want to do church. It's going to be exciting. And we planned this big Easter event, which I thought was turned out to be a lot of fun. We had a lot of people in the building. It was the first time in a year we had had that many people here on a Sunday. And it gave you the feeling that we were turning a corner and things would be new and different, but like they were, right? Completely the same and new at the same time. There's an old joke about the preacher hiring committee. For every church, it's looking for the same thing. Someone who can dynamically do the same things we've always done in new ways, right? And that's because all of us want that, right? All of us want to do new and exciting things, but to be basically doing the same thing we've always done, right? Just keep those going. And so I fell in love with the idea of maybe, you know, things are now at a station where we can kind of go back to things I recognize and you recognize, and that'll be that. And then we got another spike of numbers coming out of summer, and they told us it was going to spike in September, and it did. And started talking about Delta variant and things like this, and things got ugly again. And we said, okay, well, we'll wait and see. And we started canceling things and postponing things. Everything I had written in pencil got white out now. You know, I just erased that and try again. I had this whole service program the staff had come up with, and we'd worked together to put this program working on Wednesday's service program called WOW, and we were going to launch it. And I mean, 52 weeks in a year, and we picked the launch date to be the day that was the highest case count for the Delta variant in the entire year. And we thought, well, what are the odds, right? And so we said, okay, we'll scrap it. We'll do it some other time. We'll try to do it when it comes down. What's the lesson in all that? After yet another year of reflection, I think the lesson is that no more normal thing was probably more honest than even I was willing to accept. That circumstances are going to be a weird blend of moving targets and some combination of real concerns and hysteria all muddled together in a mix, because that's how life works, and we just thought otherwise. Normal is a lie. There is no such thing. There never was, but it felt like there was. It felt like somewhere back there was a golden era where everything was okay and we could just get back to that. And the number of times I caught myself saying, if we could just get back to. And I think what I learned in the last year is that it doesn't ever go back. It goes forward. And maybe some things come back that you recognize and some things stay the same, but changes happen. I thought 2020 was the weirdest possible year. Little did I know, 2021 is going to try it, right? And here we are. So I think as a church, the first thing I'd want to say that we learned from the first year and then the second year, and if we forget it, God will teach us again in the third year, that there is no more normal. There never was a normal. There's just life, right? One set of circumstances follow another, and they're all different. There's never been 2 years of your life that were the same, ever. There's just the illusion that they were. In every year and every season of life, you adjust to that set of circumstances and you figure out how to be the person God wants you to be in those terms. And that's what humans have been doing, I hope, as long as there have been humans. Shortly after I preached the No More Normal sermon, I preached a series of sermons from the book of Acts. I was really excited about this series. I want to talk about being the church. And I had this idea that, well, if there's no such thing as normal, then you have to figure out how to just be the church in every era of life, okay? If there's a pandemic going on, be the church. If there's no pandemic going on, be the church. There's election going on, be the church. There's a civil war going on, be the church, right? Hysteria and whatever, be the church. There has to be a way from the book of Acts to be the people we're supposed to be no matter what's going on. And it may change. Why? Because there's no normal. But there has to be a way to do what needs to be done in every season of life. And I wrote that series of sermons advocating for some ideas. The question that I asked was, are we willing to wait for the right circumstances to be the church again? And my answer was an emphatic no, that we can't wait for things to get better. And sure enough, the passage that led me to that conclusion a year ago was once again from the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 4, if you read the bottom of those three translations on the screen, the ESV, it says, "He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap." The paraphrases are a little better. New Living Translations says, "Farmers who wait for perfect weather never plant, and if they watch every cloud, they never harvest." Or the Living Bible, "If you wait for perfect conditions, you will never get anything done." Okay. And it was that lesson that kind of motivated me to be thinking of church in that way, that if there's no more normal, it means that there's not going to be a normal. There's not going to be a perfect moment when it's a good time to be the church we should be. There's not going to be a perfect moment when it's a good time to be the Christian I should be. I think when that first moment of pandemic-iness happened back in 2020, in my head I thought, well, this will blow over in a few days. And then I thought, this will blow over in a few weeks. And then I thought, this will blow over in a few months. And in my head I thought, if I just wait it out, then the important things I want to do with my life, I can start them in better circumstances. But what have we learned in the last year? There's never going to be good circumstances. Not perfect circumstances. They are better or worse, but never good. And if you put things off waiting for them, you never get there. We've learned this, parents have learned this with kids in the last 2 years. Okay, that first year, we did what we had to do. We all became homeschool parents and did the online thing and kind of figured out how to do the work with kids. Confession, my kids did not learn very much in 2020. Okay, I'm a really bad teacher. And so in my head, I thought, no problem. If fifth grade was kind of a wash, when we get to sixth grade, you know, we'll do some review and they'll get caught up and whatever. What happens if sixth grade is the same way? What we're finding out is that if you just kind of keep kicking the ball down, you keep moving it down the road a little bit, eventually you're just permanently behind. At some point, your kid's got to learn how to read. At some point, we have to dig in and say, I don't know what's going on in the world, and I don't care. We got work to do. We've got to get it done. That we can't put off the moral development of our children indefinitely. See how I switched there? If it's true for literature, if it's true for reading, it's also true for moral development. Your kids not only missed a year of arithmetic, they missed a year of Bible class. A year where they learned about right and wrong and telling the truth. And we said, well, it's okay. We're going to catch up, right? Next time around, we'll like review the whole Bible and we'll catch up. We literally started the Gospel Project over. This is the Tower of Babel, in case you didn't know. We're in Genesis. We started over. We're going to catch everybody back up. Okay? What happens if we punt again? What happens if we say, well, you know, another year, I guess? Well, eventually your kids are just morally undeveloped. Eventually they just got cheated out of the things that make them good humans. See the point? It's one thing if you can say, I've got a temporary problem, and if we wait it out, we'll get to the other side and we'll do good things. That's fine. But when that temporary thing starts to look like life and just one set of weird circumstances after another, you realize there's just never going to be a good time to plant. Planting in bad times might be bad, but it's better than not planting, because seeds you don't plant never grow. And so I think the second lesson we learned from the second year of weirdness, which is what I'm going to start referring to my time here in Ada, the years of weirdness. The second lesson we learned was it's never a good time. Okay? The kind of corresponding point to there's no normal is it's never a good time. If you're waiting for ideal conditions, they never get here. And again, confession, I preached this and then forgot it. I preached this and then things got a little better, and then things got a little worse, and I thought, oh, well, we'll just wait till they get better again. And it's so hard to remember that that's just not how the world works. That we are constantly seeing cycles throughout your entire life, if you're honest, of goods and bads and relative goods and bads throughout. And we can't wait to become the kind of people we need to be and to do the things that matter in life. So I was thinking about those two things, and it occurred to me that both of the texts that led me to that conclusion were in the book of Ecclesiastes. And so I thought, maybe I just need to read Ecclesiastes again, because it is one of those wise and thoughtful reflections on life. This morning, I'd like to just read the first chapter of Ecclesiastes with you and see if the old wise man doesn't have a lot more to say to us. Here's from Ecclesiastes chapter 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are full of weariness, a man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be. What has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new, it has already been in the ages before us? There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be counted. And I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I perceived this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Well, there's a bright little ray of sunshine for our Sunday morning. Bit cynical, isn't he? Because he's been reflecting on a long life, and he's noticed something. In fact, if you read, and this is your homework assignment today, I would love for you to try, in one sitting, to read the book of Ecclesiastes. Very short, just a couple of pages. Don't read a verse of it. Don't read a chapter of it. Read it from chapter 1. I was tempted to just read the whole thing up here, and I thought, well, it might take a while. Just read the whole thing, all 12 chapters, all the way through. And what you'll notice is quite a lot of what Solomon says in the book of Ecclesiastes is wrong. Hold on, let me explain that, okay? I'm not saying the Bible is wrong. I'm saying Solomon is recording things that he was wrong about. In one chapter, he'll say, and here's what I thought back then. And then at the end of the chapter, he'll say, but I was foolish, and I was wrong about that. And so I learned this new thing, and I went on to the next thing. And then the next chapter, it will say, and here's what I did, and it was great, except it wasn't, it was terrible, and here's what I learned from that. And so chapter after chapter, if it sounds like it's contradicting itself, it is. Because it's a man describing the different seasons and experiences of his life. He's describing his failures and what he learned from them. Everything was worthless, everything was a mistake, and here's what I got out of it. And if it sounds a little cynical, it's because it is. But what I take away from that is the value of looking at our experiences, especially the difficult ones, and trying to learn from them. The other thing I take away from that is what I see when I look back at my experiences. This was verse 8. All things are full of weariness, a man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. He says, there was never a time in my life when I was happy at that time. All things are full of weariness. There was never a time when my eyes looked at my world and said, perfect. That's exactly the way it's supposed to be. There was never a time when my ear listened to the world I lived in and said, that's it. That's exactly the way it was. Every season of my life, I found something wrong with it. I was never content. I was never happy. And I didn't know that about myself. And he acknowledges that in verse 8. Instead, what he tended to do is focus on things that he thought mattered. That's another way of reading the book of Ecclesiastes, is that it's a long book of Solomon telling you, here is what I thought mattered at one point in my life. And then later he says, and here's where I found out that didn't matter. In fact, more often than not, the conclusion of Solomon is what he said in verse 2. The beginning is the end. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanities. The word vanity is from the Hebrew word meaning emptiness, worthlessness. He said, just a shell. It was wind. It was nothing. It didn't amount to anything. Here is one of history's wisest, richest, most successful men looking back at the different seasons of his life and saying, it didn't amount to anything. The things that I thought mattered most and that I lost sleep over amounted to nothing. What do we learn from that? I think what we learn is not everything matters. This morning I had the goal of trying to learn a lesson from two strange years in my life. And what it has taught me new since last year is that not everything matters. There were a lot of things we were doing prior to 2020 that we're not doing now. Some of them went away. Some will come back. Some are gone for good. Some things changed. Some things came back and are the same. Some never will be, right? That's the way it is. But what I noticed in that is that there were some things I thought were really, really important. You know what difficult seasons of life teach us? Not everything matters. Some things do. By the way, that is Solomon's conclusion. He's not that cynical. He's cynical. He's not that cynical. He doesn't say nothing matters. By the end, he says, I did find something that mattered. But finding what really mattered in life meant that nothing else could matter as much as the thing that actually mattered. Not everything matters. And I hope, this is my wish for you, and it'll be the strangest of all wishes. I hope that this last year and the year before of weirdness and difficulty and whatever else has come your way. And COVID's just the convenient thing to talk about because we've shared it. That's not all that happened in the last year. Some of you lost fathers. Some of you lost sons. Some of you suffered losses I don't know about. I've been reflecting a lot on Celine's battle with cancer here lately. Because we're on the good side of it. If it sounds like I'm talking about it a lot, it's because it taught me a lot, and it's been on my mind in the last year. And we're on the good side of it. As things go, we're as good as it's likely to be right now, and that's exciting for me. But it was a season of time that taught me things. You had those experiences too, and I hope what you learned from it is not everything matters, but some things do. And there's never a better time than right now to pursue those things that actually matter. Now what is the title of my sermon? And I think that's the question we're supposed to be asking in every season of life. That happened, and now what? I can find another reason to put off the things that I know I need to be doing. I can find another time and another place when I think things will be better. Or I can decide that there are some things that matter and a lot of things that don't, and there is never a good time to start doing the things that matter. There is never a better time than right now to do what counts. This, again, is the message of Ecclesiastes, and I was stunned by it. I mean, stopped me in my tracks, took my breath away, stunned. Did the Bible ever do that to you? You're reading along, something familiar. I promise, I've read Ecclesiastes before. This time I read it, and actually stopped mid-sentence in chapter 9, verse 9 through 10. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your life, your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you're going. Read that first line, absolutely didn't get through to the end. I had to look around the office to see if Solomon was hiding somewhere and writing things to me, right? Because that was my moral. I don't know, again, you're going to read Ecclesiastes and get something else out of it. That was my moral for the year. That wife that you argue with and fight with and fuss with and complain about, you could lose her, is what I learned. And so maybe enjoy having her around. The other day we went to that Amish thing. I don't know what it's called. The Amish thing. We went to the Amish thing. Out in the middle of the cow pasture, they sell the stuff, you know, it's swap meat and flea market. And they got the popcorn and the pie. It was good stuff. I got like 4 bags of popcorn. Okay. But there, you know, for a cow pasture in Oklahoma, there were a lot of people there. And Celine knows that being around lots and lots of people, not like my favorite way to spend a Saturday. My favorite way to spend a Saturday is to not see any people. Okay. So she looked at me and I wasn't complaining, which is rare for me. I was not complaining about being at this thing. And she said, hey, thanks for being here and doing this with me. I know it's really not your cup of tea. And with no hesitance, and I'm not bragging on myself, but with no hesitance and no cynicism, I said back, thanks for not dying last year. And I really mean that. Like, to me, what else matters after that? I'll go anywhere. You want to go shoe shopping? Let's go. She's alive, right? When things happen in life, they're terrible things, and I don't wish them on any of you. But I hope that in the last 2 years, we've had an opportunity to learn something from these experiences. If you're blessed to have somebody you love in your life, you won't always be. That matters. Or as the end of that verse says, if you're blessed to have something to do, if you're able to accomplish something, have you thought of it that way? We think of work as a curse. Like, oh, I've got so much to do. Solomon says, if you're blessed enough to have something that needs doing and the ability to do it, what a blessing that is. You mean you're able to work? You can find purpose and meaning in your life? Good for you. Go do it with all you have. When should I do that, Solomon? Now would be good. Do it right now. In our world today, in our community, in our town, in our church, we're all making decisions about what things matter. And in the last year, we had a big experiment, last 2 years. People who have never missed a Sunday in their life missed a year's worth. You know what I mean? And they start asking the question, is this one of the things that matters? Or is this one of the things I could put off? And what I want you to think about today is this lesson, that we have an opportunity to do great and good and amazing things here. As a church, as a body, as individuals, it's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be the right time. It's never going to be normal. But we have a moment to do things that matter. My moral from the book of Ecclesiastes that I got over and over again as I was reading it, do not wait to live a meaningful life. Do not put off one more season or one more circumstance and say, after that's over, I'll get to the things that count. This is the moment God has given you to do the things that matter. And I really honestly believe that being part of this church and the ministries and the work of this church is one of those things that matter. And I'd love to see you participate in it. The book ends with these simple and thoughtful words. The end of the matter, all has been said. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, every secret thing, whether good or evil. The end of the days come to an end. And we say to God, here's what I did with that time you gave me. Can I tell you something he's going to be unimpressed with? Excuses about why things were different, about why things weren't normal, and why I didn't get around to the stuff he gave me to do. Instead, what he wants from us is not perfection. It's not ideal circumstances. It's every one of us doing the best that we can do with the time we have been given. That's what we're here to do as a church family, and I hope you're committed to that as well. Let's bow in a word of prayer. Our Father, we thank you for these last couple of years that for many of us have been the hardest of our lives, for others, at least inconvenient. We thank you for hardship and what it teaches us. We thank you when you take things away so that we can learn the value of the things that you give. We thank you for purpose and for opportunity and the strength to put them together. God, give us the courage to stand up again and do the things that need doing in this world, in our lives, in our community, in our church. Help us to waste not one more day and not one more hour that could be spent in your service. And forgive us for every excuse we've made in the past. Bring us instead to the glory of your Son, who lived a life of purpose in difficult times and taught us the meaning of honoring God and keeping his commandments in every moment of our lives. This we pray in his name. Amen.